So, again, my name is Ricardo Guiti. You know, lovingly called Baba Ricardo. I am from Honduras. I was born in Honduras, Central America, raised in this village or township of Colón, Honduras, called Santa Rosa de Aguán. Literal translation for that would be the waters of Saint Rose. Is that right? Yeah, Santa Rosa de Aguán, the holy waters of Saint Rose. And you know, that's interesting because the thing is that the Garifuna people, you know, as a result of colonialism, have a practice of combination of Catholicism, African and Indian beliefs. Rites of passage, a celebrated birth, arrival of puberty, and ultimately our transition to our deaths. You know, the fundamental principles associated with the Garifuna culture, as I have learned it and as I know it, is a respect, a great respect for the community, a great respect for our elders, a great respect for our ancestors. You know, we don't just simply bury our dead and forget about them. We go into situations that may seem difficult or hard to navigate. And so we bring them into those situations or those issues in a ritualistic way, in a spiritual way, try to assist us in being able to overcome with those issues. And so, you know, I came here as a child, so I am an immigrant. First generation immigrant from Honduras, came with my parents back in the late 60s, where I had an opportunity, actually a blessing, where we were living in this tenement and directly adjacent to this this school of art for children and adults. It's called the El Maluz School of Fine Arts. And so in the early years at the El Maluz School of Fine Arts, I was privy to meeting who would be my first formal drum teacher. His name is Baba Tunji Olatunji. Baba Tunji Olatunji is from Nigeria. Interestingly enough, full circle, you know, but, you know, it's interesting how I wound up in Nigeria. Interesting how I wound up in a community, a village not much unlike mine own in Honduras, you know, and yeah, just that journey. But again, I went to the El Maluz School of Fine Arts, went to high school in Boston, Massachusetts, where I originally landed, then went to higher education in Atlanta. Went to a school called Morehouse College, left there, returned back to Boston, and got married, and ultimately moved here. Since then, my marriage has been disillusioned, so I'm divorced now. But you know, I got here to Washington in 2003, and I've been here since. I do a lot of work as an artist activist, musician. So I work with children. I work with universities, and you know, try to culturally enrich their lives by providing them information about my Garifuna culture, which is very unique. The Garifunas is a group of Africans that were never enslaved. Okay, they were mixed with an indigenous population that ultimately created who I am. There's a couple of different narratives about the history. You know, one talks about a maroon slave ship in the St. Vincent Isles, which ultimately resulted in them, you know, going into to being welcomed by the indigenous population in that Caribbean area. However, you know, there's other narratives and other stories that talk about a beginning that's much sooner. As a matter of fact, there's a book, I'm trying to figure out the name of that book, let's see, where is it? They came before Columbus. Yeah, there it is. They came before Columbus, and that book is written by. Who's it written by? Here, I can write them down. And I actually have a copy of this book, and it's embarrassing that I don't remember the name, but of the. So Ivan Vance Sertima is the name of the book. They came before Columbus. And this book right here, interestingly enough, has information in it relative to the Garifuna people. So it's hundreds of years before the actual dates that talk about the Garifuna people coming here into the Americas. They're, you just let the plane go away a little bit, the helicopter.
Wow.
Yeah, they, you know, they talk about a pilgrimage from the through the Orinoco River, you know, through the Venezuelan indigenous population there, you know, ultimately landing in the St. Vincent Isles. But then after that, you know, there's a history of the Garifunas initially landing on the north coast of the Atlantic. So what happened was that the original Garifunas, after many, many years of conflict between the British and themselves, you know, they were ultimately exiled from the St. Vincent Isles, landing in the Punta Gorda, which is in Honduras. Punta Gorda is in Roatan. That's, quote unquote, the initial landing spot of the Garifuna people. And they continued on, ultimately landing in Guatemala, Nicaragua, and Belize. Okay? And so the history is very unique. The community is one that once upon a time worked as one. You know, one of the mantras of my personal one is I like to say that we're stronger united than divided, and I say that in Garifuna as well. It's Eretimati Wawuwara. That means we're stronger united, right? And so when we say that, we truly did mean it. We are or were a community, at least in my experience growing up, we're a community that would were there for one another. So for example, if we had anyone in the community who needed to build a home or erect a thatched roof on a home, we would all get together, and the women would cook the food and everything, and the men would like build the whatever it was that would be needed. And so the interesting thing about the Garifuna community is that we did place responsibilities on the shoulders of each of us. You know, things have changed a little bit now, but initially it was a job, for example, of the mother to maintain the household and take care of the children through their early years, the male children in particular. And so the interesting thing about that is that the Garifuna language is matriarchal and patriarchal. What that means is that that, you know, the women speak a certain way and the men speak a different way, completely different. Okay? And so the boys would learn how to the native language of the mother, because we have to go back a little bit earlier, that when the original indigenous population of the Caribbean would vanquish other communities, right?
Yeah.
What they would do is they would take their women, you know, and so their women didn't want to forget their mother tongue, and they taught it to their children. Okay, and so the men would speak a different way, those warriors, the Arawaks,
yeah.
And then the Garifuna women would speak a different way, the Kalina. And so it's an interesting dynamic, and yet we were able to communicate effectively with one another. So the mothers would have the boys or the children for the first 5-6 years of their lives. Then they would go to the, you know, to the forest, etc. With the fathers, and they would learn the language of the father. And so, one of the most important things about the community, besides the aforementioned, with respect to the importance of unity and the importance of being together, is the Garifuna music. Okay, Garifuna music is a music that is often used in activism. We have our drum, okay? We have our drum, which is our messenger. We have the language of the Garifuna, which will oftentimes provide us stories and give us information through the songs. For example, we have a song that talks about the early departure of the Garifuna people from the St. Vincent Isles, landing in Honduras. And yeah. No matter where you go, there's a different variation of that song.
Yeah,
with the same type of, it's a different story, but the same sort of cadence, if you will,
yeah,
for the song, so that when we all get together, we're able to connect. One of the things that I want to point out also is that the Guatemala landing would have a different experience than what the one in Honduras, right? There's myriads different verses,
yeah,
for that song though. So the thing is that there was an initial verse, but now people are creating verses for it left and right constantly. So the song is evolving all the time.
Oh wow.
Right? So it's a never ending journey, if you will, through the different experience. So do you have any questions? I mean, I just wanted to give you a little bit of a background.
Yeah.
So
kind of, yeah. Last time we talked a little bit about music as a language.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up talking about sounding music rather than playing music.
Right. And that is actually from an experience that I had with a brother artist from Zimbabwe. And so he had come to Seattle, and he was doing a workshop. And so there was made comment they play the marimba in Zimbabwe, which is a percussion instrument.
Yeah.
It's also a struggle. And so there came a time when, I forgot, there was someone inside of the classroom that was saying, "So how long have you been playing?" And so, you know, without hesitating, and I believe it was part of a workshop that I was working with as well, with Garifuna. So
yeah,
it was an exchange. And so he said, "I think it's important that we clarify something, you know, and I hope that it will provide you with an appreciation that it can extend it to you to understand that in Africa, where I am from, when we work, when we become part of our music with our instruments, we don't use the word play, we use the word sounds, okay? Because when we say the word play, the African language that I speak is such that you have to be really specific about what you say. It has to be done in a way where it's respectful and consistent, because oftentimes it's difficult to translate,
yeah,
because the limitations of the English language, other ways or other forms of expression can't really be seen in the same way that they are in the country of origin that's trying to explain something. So for them, sounding the instrument is what they use, not play, because play equated with something that was of little importance, something that was more in line with a child's pastime, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
So playing was not part of their language when it came to expressing themselves or explaining, you know, the process of bringing sound out of the instrument.
Yeah.
So it sounded, it's not played. I thought that was really interesting, and I got it immediately. It's like, because the thing is that, you know, where I sound the drum in my language, the drum, I always say that music is a universal language that unites us all, and that drum is the primordial messenger. That is to say that even to this day, there are areas in West Africa where the tonal language of the drums, okay, the tonal language of the drum is actually able to convey to someone that's listening exactly what that drum is saying. In other words, there's a way that one can communicate efficiently and effectively simply by sounding the drum and bring out the different tones, because the language itself is tonal in its nature, high, mid, and low. So the same can be said of the drum. And so that is kind of like consistent with the Garifuna language and the Garifuna music. The Garifuna music has a variety of different sounds and different tones that are associated with specific genres within that genre of the Garifuna music, okay?
Yeah.
The most popular being the Bunta rhythm, okay? And it's probably the most celebrated of the Garifuna music, right? And so, and what I can do is I can give you this, share this with you right here. It's a sheet that I put together about, you know, the different types of music, some of the different types of music of the Garifuna community. And so I have here the punta, the paranda, the sambai, wanaragua, chumba, gunje, dugu, and gungu, which are the rhythms that are most part of our spirituality.
Yeah.
There's actually, these rhythms are often played inside of the temples of the Garifuna people. But, go ahead, you can take a look at that.
Thank you.
So that is a list of the different songs, or rather, different genres within the tradition of the Garifuna music, and it gives you some explanation of the rhythms inside of this, so that, you know, for your dissemination.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Yeah. So we've been talking a lot about, the reason I brought up the sounding was because obviously that's something you learned in Africa and Zimbabwe. And I thought it was really interesting in our last conversation when we talked about similar universal languages, about learning other people's versions of the same language.
That's right.
And like, it made me think about you're like learning over time, because when you learn a new language, it kind of expands on your identity. So.
Sure.
How does your like the music that you sound, how does that expand or expand your identity on what you've already learned from your Garifuna culture?
That's a really good question, and I appreciate that. One of the aspects of the Garifuna artist or musician, from my perspective, learning and being a part of it from a very early age, was an appreciation for all music. We had our identity with our Garifuna folkloric music. However, there were other musics that were part of our experience. Okay, so, you know, for example, we had like the salsa music. We had the merengue music, right? We had the rancheros from Mexico, right? So there's a variety of different music that was part of the Garifuna experience.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes what we would do is we would take from each of those forms of expression, and we would take it and develop what would later become our own identity within the tradition of our own music. That's to say that, for example, the punta music, the hugungu, Dugu, which were traditional music, eventually evolved, okay, through the use of like modern instruments, because initially we didn't have a guitar. We just had our drum, okay. We had the turtle shell. We had the conch shell, okay. So the maraca, okay, which is the sisira, okay. I can show you the instruments. We have the again the conch shell, which is called the watabage. We were able to take from these different styles of music and develop what would later on become the paranda, right? And paranda is kind of like the blues of the Garifuna people. And in addition to that, I was privy to being part of a generation that developed the electric version of the Garifuna music, which is called punta rock. So when I was around 15 years old or so, I brought this to the attention of my elders that were in the groups that I was playing with. I was playing with my dad and my uncle back in the early 70s as a teenager and stuff. And so I was like, hey, what about this? Why don't we, because during that time, we had Garifuna artists that were singing in Garifuna, but they were singing like merengues and stuff in Garifuna,
yeah.
Right? And so what happened was is that wouldn't it be a good idea if we kind of like put electric guitar with bass guitar into this and turn it up using the actual rhythms and the actual drums and creating a new sound.
Yeah.
This is what I'm thinking. And they were like, yeah, whatever, right? The next thing I know, somebody in California was doing a song and they called it Punta Rock, which is something that I had thought about when I was like 15 years old in Boston, Massachusetts with my dad. So, the thing with the Garifuna people was just that we really respected and appreciated all of these different genres. So for me, when I was coming up, the different expressions of music languages are spoken in specific ways, right? So if you go to Venezuela and you go to Peru, Peru's gonna have their own swing, if you will.
Yeah.
And you're gonna have a cadence that speaks to the specific way in which that traditional, that voice of the people musically expresses itself. Okay. The same way in the Dominican Republic. Dominican Republic has the merengue. That is sounded in a specific way. The salsa, the Cuban music, they all have these little nuances, specifics about the way that they're done. I think you spoke about some music that you yourself had experienced. And what was that music?
Math rock.
Math rock. Right? Sounds real real technical.
Yeah.
Math rock, I mean.
Yeah.
And I'm making an assumption regarding it. But yeah, I mean, you know math rock. So a Garifuna person would listen to the math rock and then after that try to pay homage to the creatives of that particular genre by making sure that they spoke it in a way that was consistent with the way that it was meant to be expressed.
Yeah.
Okay? So that the merengue sounds a specific way. Okay? The swing is a certain way. It's played with a tambora, okay, a couple of congas, and the guiro or the guira, which is the metal instrument that you strike with a pick, right? The guira, and then you have the guiro, which is a plant in itself, right? And it's played with a stick, right? Those sound a specific way, so that when you're sounding a merengue from the Dominican Republic, if someone from the Dominican Republic hears you sounding that particular rhythm, they'll be like, oh, wow. Wow, tú eres dominicano. De dónde eres? Tú eres un tigre. Tú eres. They swing. They speak in a different way, as opposed to like somebody from Puerto Rico. There was a Puerto Rico, dígame eso. Or somebody from Peru. Sí, cómo no, pero aquí están las cosas. They swing in different way.
Yeah.
Same way here, you speak with someone from the southern region. They have a different cadence or a different way of speaking. So these are things that I paid attention to when I was growing up, okay? These are things that I was were really important to me. This is my sister from New York, so I'm going to take this call right in. But back to the point that I was discussing, you know, with family, you're my family, you're an extension of my family, but, you know, family call, you respond immediately, you know, and you excuse yourself with respect and then step to the side and say, hey, listen, I'm this, I'll call back, etc. That's just the way that we do in the Garifuna community.
Yeah.
A lot of that is being lost today, Alex, unfortunately, because you know, I think with the onslaught of these influences and the access to what we have, because, I mean, this is a computer for all intents and purposes, it opens up an entire world for anyone to go into and make a decision about what it is that they hold or they deem to be the way that things should be. And so, you know, it's kind of bittersweet because at the same time it opens up, it also takes away. And so I had an interesting conversation with someone in the Garifuna community not long ago. Surprised me about, you know, the response that was given and in response to a conversation we were having. And the conversation was surrounding about surrounding approach to teaching and an approach to interacting with one another as human beings. The roles, for example, of the youth in the community versus the roles of the elders in the community, right? And so the response that I got was, well, you have to understand that we, you know, it's Garifuna 2.0 now. I had no idea what that meant. But, you know, but it moved me in a different direction a little bit, and it kind of like, it worried me a little bit.
Yeah.
Because the original, and there's always ways that we can look at and try to improve in creating bridges, you know, that bring us together as a community, as a family, the way we're doing that. But I'm a believer if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
You know, and so because now it appears that the unity that I once was privy to, that I experienced growing up, that to this day, in my day, I have so many wonderful memories of growing up in Honduras in my small village, that ultimately I'm looking to go back.
Yeah.
You know? And I've been here, how many years? I came here in 1967. Is that like 50-something years? 53 years
old? Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just ridiculous for me to still have this longing to go back home.
Yeah.
And that is a testament to the Garifuna community that I was raised in. And, you know, where we were a family, you know? And it didn't matter if one was here or there, we were a family, we were a community. I could walk outside and, you know, there were a row of homes that knew who my mother, who my father was, and I didn't have to worry about anything because they would make sure I get home. Or they would feed me on the way to my own home. You know, things like that. Those things are very difficult to attain. That way of being is lost. And it's unfortunate, you know, but it's the reality of today. Because we're so far removed from that universal truth, which is love, you know? We're so far removed from it that we are now walking in a path that has taken us completely away from that. And so everyone is apprehensive about everything because, and rightfully so, it's just so unfortunate. So, yeah, the Garifuna, you know, we are about our music. And then again, as I said, those are examples that you can review. If you have any additional questions, I'm certainly happy to answer or respond to those accordingly. And, you know, eventually, maybe when we get together, I guess we're supposed to get together at least a couple of times.
I think next week as well.
Yeah. So what we can do then is next week, maybe I can we can meet at a park or something, and I can bring the Garifuna drum. Okay.
Oh, wow.
And we can maybe go over a couple of different rhythms and stuff, just so that you get an idea about how it is. And maybe you can show me a rhythm of math rock using the drum as well, which would be really cool for me to
Yeah, math rock is kind of, it's like a sound. You feel like the rhythm. What I love about math rock is the melodies are very, very fun.
So it's more of a melodic
style
versus a rhythmic style.
It's a rhythmic style, but you hear a lot of the same rhythms from other stuff. Like, there's a lot of fusions in math rock.
Okay, so it's not like soundscape music or anything like that.
No.
Do you know what soundscape is?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm really curious.
It's pretty fun to listen to. There's a lot of like places that people play it. I think the most prominent is in Japan, I think.
Right, yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, there's a lot of Japanese math workers.
Asian brothers are really into it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Yeah. So I have one more question.
Sure.
So we talked a lot about, in the beginning, about history and the different songs that have come out of that history in the Garifuna culture. So would it make sense to say history equals music? Or there's a lot of history you can find through music. And
that's a profound statement.
In the context of everything else you've talked about, I think that makes, especially when it comes to hearing other people's history and being able to play it the way they've been playing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very profound statement, Alex. That's an awareness that puts you beyond your years, because that is exactly what it is. As a matter of fact, there are certain regions in West Africa that use music to convey history through the griot. You familiar with that term, griot?
I've heard it. I don't know exactly.
Griot, G-R-I-O-T. Griot is a historian, okay? And they're basically historians who will give you information that goes back to multi-generations of just one particular family, okay? Through song.
Wow.
Through song, through music. So in essence, a griot could be singing for hours. Just about the beginning of this, you know, of the Diabate or the Kuyate, all and run the history down from great 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 grandfather all the way down to the most recent child being born.
That's incredible.
So yeah, it's like human history books. So to your point, that is an excellent way of looking at it, because it's the truth.
And that's why there's every place has a different what is it called? Swing.
The different swing, you don't want to take away, the different swing is just simply the way that it's expressed. So it's more of a regional thing than anything else, okay? So, however, the music with history, that, again, would probably go back to the time of Africa, from where most of the music came from.
Yeah,
but you know, with respect to the statement made about the griot, we're talking about history books, okay, and we're talking about the history book being part of music. That is exactly right, because the griots will sing you their history, multi generations back to the beginning.
Yeah,
okay. So that is something different. Now, with respect to the language of the music. That's going to be something that's just a form of expression for the individuals, depending on what region that they're from. So if you have someone from South America, you have someone from Central America, they just have different ways of it. You have people from the Caribbean, they just have different ways. And then within those regions, there are like little, sectional differences as well.
Yeah.
So for example, if you have someone just take Mexico for example. Mexico is, oh my God, it's so vast, right?
Yeah.
California used to be Texas, used to be Mexico.
Yeah.
So, there's all kinds of different ways that they express themselves with food, with their music. And so there would be maybe one region that would do sing a song or dance a certain way. Then there'd be another one that would dance very similarly because of the influences, but then they would express themselves in a different way based on the experiences in the region that they're from. I hope that answered your question to a certain extent.
Of course.
You know, I don't want to go overboard and stuff. And say, oh, wow.
No, that's exactly the goal.
Okay. All right, cool. Any other questions?
I don't want to take all of your time, but I've got a few more questions I still have.
Okay, let's go.
If you want to answer a few of them, I can find them here. The transcription didn't exactly work out. It turned itself off, and I'm not going to restart it. No issues. So, a few other questions I came up with had to do with, I guess we already talked about this in a way, but just connecting it to, so in this MUS group, we talked a lot about, and especially last meeting that we did, we talked a lot about blackness and connecting with your own blackness and what that means for everyone, because it's a very hard thing to define. Obviously we talked about history, and blackness, in a way, is a lot about history. Like, you feel...
Blackness is history, because I mean, that's your origin. We're talking about the carbon suits that we wear, being the origin.
Yeah.
So it is said of all the beginnings was from there. And then as we move further and further away, there was opportunity for us to adjust to our surroundings and becoming who we were in those different regions based on the fact that, we traveled there. And then it changes a little bit, but ultimately, going back to the beginning, blackness is history for everyone, For me, having said that, that's something that really I don't struggle with, and I certainly recognize the uniqueness of my own history, and the fact that, because people look at me and immediately assume, just from the language, just from the speaking, I'm African American. And so, when I clarify, I said, no, actually, I was born in Honduras, and I am Garifuna. My history is a little bit different, And so, having said that, one of the things that I have always, more recently than before, because I was very active and activism is important to me, recognizing individuality is important to me. There's just come a time where I seem to be looking at things in a different way. For example, I actually see the person that I see beyond the carbon suit.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, having said that, I appreciate, but I see everything in it and everything inside of you as the individual who you are, not removing the blackness, but simply compartmentalizing it in a way that it's understood. However, you need to dive deeper and much more in order to extrapolate from there what really is most important.
Yeah.
Again, finding a base to creating that universal truth, which is love. For me, everything else is an illusion. It just is. I've just come to that conclusion through my years, my experiences, through opportunities that I've had for meeting all of these great people from all over the world. I have just come to the conclusion that, the universal truth is love. Everything else is an illusion. I've learned that emotions are feelings, and I've really bought into that. Emotions are feelings, and that my strength comes from my ability being able to make decisions based on what I know to be the right thing to do, as opposed to simply reacting and responding. responding because of an emotion that I can't control it coming through me. I can control how I let it out, however.
Yeah.
I can't control how it comes in, but I can control how it goes out. That's where the power lies. And so I express my blackness, I guess, through my ability being able to see more than what is. I look at things in a deeper way, and I try to make good decisions about how I navigate through this process called life.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, blackness is very important, but there's so much more.
Yeah.
There's so much more to it. And given the unfortunate transgressions of humankind currently with what's going on, you know, with all the different movements, all of the things that are coming out now as a result of videographers and, you know, that are able to capture all of these atrocities that have been going on for millennia. You know, it's really interesting. But again, I think it's just important to understand that universal truth. And, it's love. The rest is kind of like bullshit.
Yeah.
We focus on the almighty dollar. I don't know who created that. Was a genius in creating the monetary system. I mean, there was a time in Africa when the exchange of services was done in a way where it was tangible. It was something, you know, for example, I'll give you a chicken if you help me build a house.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it was like that. We used product that we had available, or if you do this, I will help you to fix your home, and, you know, things of that nature. And someone who came in and decided to monetize as well, you know, we'll start off with calories, and we'll do this. Next thing you know, people out there are just living lives and whatnot, but there's so much disparity.
Yeah, there's a big separation.
There's a certain group of individuals that are going to be in a completely different reality versus someone who's...
They're not building relationships to build what they want to have in their lives.
And the reality of it is that if it's a minute percentage of those individuals that have most of that wealth, were to pull it together, they could eliminate everything.
Yeah.
They could eliminate everything that is contra to what life should be all about. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so those are the kind of things that I think about with respect to my blindness. Because I see it with my blindness that, you know, although that there are those that would want to work and try to create these bridges, you know, the powers that be, whomever they are, won't allow it to happen. And it just goes on. They fall into this matrix of this unbelievable dredge of just soot and, you know, crap. It's just, you know. But we move on.
Yeah.
You know, the I think I mentioned it before. There's an old adage that speaks to this about the difficulties of those things that we meet on our journey. And so the metaphor is that she uses, how does one eat the head of a rat?
Yeah.
Bit by bit.
Yeah.
Bit by bit. You just got to do what you can with what you have. Forget about the awareness. So what was the other question?
Yeah. One of them had to do with inspiration for creating new kinds of sounds, new work, and how that changes. And inspiration, not just for your music, you know, how I think about it, but also all the other work you do, like the teaching, working with groups like MAS, the group I'm in.
Right. Yeah, I was a founding member of MAS, actually.
Oh, wow.
One of the founding members of MAS, and. I remember when we were discussing it, it was at least a couple of years before we even finally got together and did a round robin over at the Seattle University of Washington. And so this was the very first meeting that we had. I remember that Monica Rojas had to get a room at the University of Washington, right? And so she got the room and we met. And the first day we met, one of the founding participants left his keys inside of the door, which was locked, okay? And so we all stayed there. Everybody stayed there until we figured out how to get the keys out. And he eventually did get his key. But it was a testament to, you know, what we, from the very beginning, wanted to create in terms of a vision for us, which is that in unity there's strength, and that, you know, we shouldn't ever feel like we're alone, you know. And so for me, you speak about the evolution of music and where it has taken me to work with all of these different things. I think it began from my childhood with my grandmother in Santa Rosa de Aguan. And, you know, my dad, who was a musician, you know, he's transitioned now, but he was a musician and I was part of his band. And then, you know, so I gained a deep appreciation for all these different sounds because of him. He played saxophone. We played all these different genres of music, sounded these different genres of music with his group and his brother's group. So it was like a family affair. And also Baba Tunji Olatunji, who was my first formal drum instructor.
Yeah.
Again, he's the one who came from Nigeria.
Yeah.
And he, because he was the first, he sounded with a bunch of great jazz pioneers and jazz influencers from the very beginning, like McCoy Tyner. I mean, just huge names in jazz, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, having those experiences just kind of opened up my world to kind of like looking and just listening and all of these different sounds. And then, you know, visiting other countries and seeing, you know what, I'm really just like a piece of sand or whatever. And in a whole, you know, in an anthill, you know, really need to try to look for ways that I can hear the music or hear the different sounds. And, you know, that began my journey, you know, again, began my journey with the music, began my journey with teaching and trying to share as much as I can, you know, because I believe that it's important that, you know, you grow by building and you build. By planting seeds, you know?
Yeah.
So if we can put organic material into a soil and do what's necessary for it to be healthy and grow, I think it's important to do that. So that's what I try to do. I try to provide, you know, those seeds and try to be as open as possible, providing with honesty and integrity information, you know, as I'm asking, responding in a way that's going to assist in you, for example, being able to take something away from that you yourself can extend into your relationships. And as you go through your process, maybe having a conversation where it's reversed, where you'll be here and, you know, the person that you're speaking with is going to be there.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to go ahead and, you know, share what you, what you've learned and what you've added to it.
Yeah. I think in the short time that I've actually known you and met you and talked to you, you've basically been my drum teacher, and we haven't done any drumming.